Have you ever had one of those days at work where you finally walk in through the door and you plop down on the couch, the blinds are pulled, and you think, what just happened? What did I just do? That's kind of the life of a photojournalist at Ron Shera Productions, or at least when it comes to certain stories. We're going to talk about them today. Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. And along for today's adventure, I have two of our most seasoned photojournalists. Photojournalist, Portuguese for good guy. Eric Anderson and Kyle Heidenreich. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Yo.
How many times a week do you go plop down on the couch like that?
How many days are there in the week again?
At least 8 or 9.
Yeah.
No, the reason I wanted to talk to you guys, right, we just wrapped up the Minnesota State Fair, which was epic to be back, and we did a little Q&A with viewers, and they're always asking about the television show. How do you produce television shows? How many hours? How much tape? You know, all that jazz. And one of the questions was, the guys who take the pictures, to which I respond, said, well, it's video. Right? And
they said, video is just a series of pictures anyways, right?
What's their job like? And I got to thinking about a couple of the stories you guys have worked on. I've got an easy job, right? When we go out into the field to gather stories, I've got my little writer's pencil that I carry along. But you guys have tripods, drones, extra lenses, cameras, heavy batteries, survival kits, Leatherman tools, all this stuff. Like, how do you cope?
Well, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's a funny topic because my friends and family, you know, they'll see pictures you might post online of, you know, some beautiful locations that you're at. But the day leading up to that, or as you lived it to get that photo, can be a lot. You know, it could be like a 14-hour day of getting up early, having to gather all the batteries, all the equipment, keeping track of all that, hiking up a mountain.
The equipment is the biggest stressor. Yeah, it always is. Like, you may know you're going to be up and down a mountainside or underwater or wherever, but it's the equipment. It's the can. Like, that's what I'm always sweating before a shoot, is making sure, okay, we got everything that we're going to need. Because sometimes it can be down to one bolt or one, you know, plate that connects the camera to the tripod that will, that's not a long. That's right. Going to make this shoot a lot tougher. So that's usually what I'm sweating, is the equipment.
And yeah. We are not normally next to a hardware.
No.
No, you got to make sure you have it leaving the door. Yeah. So like you said, like that first night of sleep going into the shoot, it's probably not much sleep happening.
Yeah.
Because you're just thinking about
trying to anticipate everything that you're about to do, and then you triple check things anyway, but then you'll think about it for the fourth time at night.
Like, I agree. Sometimes sleepless the night before. Until we start rolling and there's at least a few shots in the can, that's when I'm most stressed out, for sure.
Which is weird, because the night before shoots, I always see you guys out with a six-pack of IPA.
That is how we deal with the anxiety.
I thought you were tired from the IPAs.
So it's equipment. There's a couple things we hear a lot as photographers talk about gear and who's taking what gear and this kind of stuff. Pack your own parachute is one phrase that we say a lot. And two is one is none. So if you've got two of something and one of them breaks, you still have it. So two of one, two.
I like that.
Yeah.
Another one I always think about, like if you have a ton of stuff, like, do I have my batteries? I have the camera, I have the media. Well, like, at least I'll be able to make something.
Yeah.
Like, at the very least, but it's good to have all the extras.
One of my mentors in the business way back in the day was Jim Wilson. And he was shooting over in Milwaukee, and there was a little ski resort hill. And they would stack up all the snow at the end of the season in the shadowed parts, whatever, the northerly hill. And they had the old tarp, the ski place from Brewers Stadium, the infield tarp. So all summer long, people would look at this, you know, 200-foot logo of the breweries. And in July, they'd pull that tarp back and they'd do this summer skiing, and snowboarding was kind of new at that point, event. But he shows up to the shoot and his camera breaks down. He's got no viewfinder, and it is still one of the most award-winning stories ever shot, because he knew how to use the camera, and his deal was, well, you can't make excuses. You need to get this stuff done. Like, how do you do that?
Well, you don't have a choice. If you're out of state, you flew in somewhere, and you better find a way to make it happen. Yeah. There's a lot of resources that went into getting you there.
Yeah. Otherwise, you get back to the office, and it's like going to the principal's office, right? Scott calls you in.
Well, there's a lot more cameras around these days. Everyone's got them in their pocket, and we have absolutely made use of iPhone video when in a pinch. So that makes it easier. I would say before, having done this for a while, before you had less gear, but it was much bigger, much heavier, and much more precious, because it was more expensive. Yes. It was just much rarer. So if you had your one big Betacam and your three batteries, you never lost track of those batteries.
No, because you had $50,000 into set of gear. Right.
And that was it. So it was one camera guy, one camera. Now, we still go on most of our shoots as solo camera guys. One of our shows, we will usually have two camera guys, but irregardless, you're bringing everything you need. And now it's one camera guy, maybe six cameras. Mm-hmm. You got your main camera, and then you've got a DSLR for the slider, and you've got the GoPro and the drone and the handheld gimbal. And a lot, it's cheaper. There's more of it. It's more versatile, smaller, lightweight, but there's so much more of it.
It all breaks down into five pieces, and then when you get to your hotel room, it just explodes everywhere into every charging port.
Yeah.
Try to figure out where it goes.
Yeah, you're 10 minutes into your hotel room, and it looks like you've lived there a month. Mm-hmm. I know, stuff scattered around. And that is kind of the point of why we're talking today, because you both have sort of been to the end of the world with television gear and have documented and gathered these unbelievable stories. Kyle, the Whitewater trip you took. Talk about that shoot. Was the story?
Well, the story was just basically explaining that there's whitewater rafting in Minnesota, and you can go down the Kettle River, you can go down, I believe it was the St. Louis River, and when it's flowing a lot, you can get some class 2 and 3 rapids and, you know, have a great time. But I think the logistical part of that was, you know, more to sweat than anything. It wasn't like physically or mentally challenging, but how are you going to keep all this gear dry? How are you going to secure it to the rafts? How are you going to shoot it? You know, how many times are you going to get out along the river? And make it happen. Cause when we got out, we only did 2 or 3 passes, kind of leapfrogging the tubers, and getting me and my coworker Josh at the time in the boat and going over the rapids ourselves and not making the Pelican case flop out of the into the drink. That was the stressful factor of that. But then just maximizing your time, because like when you get out on shore for a little bit, if you found a spot to pull over, you know, throw the drone up in the air quick at one angle. You hopefully have a GoPro or two locked down in a couple other places, and then 2 FS7 cameras on the sticks pointing at 2 different areas. So that's close to 6 shots at once. And then doing that, I think we only pulled over 3 times.
Yeah, you can't exactly send them back up river too easily.
You know, it's like an hour or two bus ride to get into location. And then if you barge the river, maybe 40 minutes through the slow parts.
Yeah. Right.
You have shoots like that where you only get one or two cracks at something. Sometimes you get to try over and over to get the shots you need. And then there's some where you better be ready. Maybe have multiple cameras going. You're only going to get a couple passes at it.
Yep. So in that, you got to know exactly what shot you're after, you know, where you're going to point it, where you're going to be ready, anticipate where they're going to end up, and hopefully it works out.
So on that shoot, how many cameras did you lose or get wet?
None. They all came back and functioned.
The only ones that got wet were designed to.
That's true. Yeah, GoPros.
Yeah.
You got lucky. I can remember the first time we did a shoot in a canoe. We were on the Kinnikinick or Kinnikinick, depending on who you talk to, river, shooting a piece on this canoe and paddle and da-da-da. And I've got a guy paddling us down the river, and there's a second canoe. Cy Dotson was the photojournalist, and he had a paddler kind of, you know, moving him around so he could shoot the story. And we come around this bend, and there are just certain things in this world you never expect to see. And when you actually see them, you go, oh, that's odd. And here's Cy standing in about knee-deep water holding this $50,000 Sony Betacam, and there's water just like running out of the bottom. You go, huh, darndest thing.
Not supposed to be there?
That's odd, right? So it does happen, and that day, that was not Cy's fault. The guy paddling the canoe was drinking beers and fishing versus worrying about the photojournalist.
Well, it doesn't help that with Minnesota Bound, it's got to be 70% of our stories are by water. And if it's not water, it's dusty or windy. So it's all the big enemies, but water, weather, yeah.
And in Kyle's case, white water, yeah. Class 3 rapids. Yeah. All right, I want to talk more about this adventure aspect of what you guys do, because Eric, you've got a doozy from about a year ago. A doozy that, oddly enough, was just recognized by the Emmy folks. We'll get to that in a second. But first, we need to pay just a couple of bills here. You are listening to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. You know, we've got a lot of great sponsors that make these episodes happen each week. And the first I'd like to thank today is Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Beef. Grass-fed beef right here in Minnesota. You know, we make a career talking about clean water, native habitat, and some of the best environmental practices. That's exactly why I'm so excited about Thousand Hills. You know, it is locally raised beef done differently. Let me explain a little bit. You see, Thousand Hills uses what is called regenerative agriculture to raise their cattle. Those beef cows, they graze in fields of wild grasses, and they move between a lot of different fields of grass. It is a sustainable ecosystem free of synthetic fertilizers and chemical herbicides. It's a system of agriculture that promotes clean water, natural grasses, and the best beef you've tasted. Of course, the Shirk family loves grilling, and we love smoking, and we do it several times a week. And now we cook with Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Beef. And guess what? The Shirk boys look so forward to those meals. It's beef raised the right way. You can check out Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Grass-Fed Beef to understand their regenerative agricultural practices and fall in love with Thousand Hills Beef. We'd also like to thank the Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
And also a big thank you to North Dakota Tourism. It is just about hunting season, and you can start planning your hunt in North Dakota at legendarynd.com. You know, North Dakota is home to more than 800,000 plots hunting acres. That's private land that owners open up to public hunting. The plots guides, they show you exactly where all that land sits. Right now, get this, North Dakota's ringneck pheasant crowing count, they are up 15% this year. The state is also home to an estimated 2.9 million breeding ducks, an absolute outdoor oasis just waiting. Hey, bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com. Okay, back to the grind. We are some of the luckiest people on the planet. Our jobs, we go out the door to the prettiest and most scenic and wildest places to document these stories. Kyle, in your case, you love water. You've done these stories on Lake Superior surfers, you know, who are out in this 30-degree water in the middle of winter. Their beards are all iced up. You shoot beautiful video. You shoot whitewater rafting, people watch it and go, oh, that must be a fun job. Eric, you had a doozy from a year or so ago. You added water and then a little bit of air to your chute. Talk about it.
Yeah, we went hang gliding, and not just what you imagine, but this was, how to describe it, tow behind a boat in order to launch the hang glider. So pretty unique. I'm not sure the guy who was doing it thinks there might be one other fella in the world that launches hang gliders that way. So that was unique. So yeah, we were at Lake Pepin and we would take off on the boat and it would tow the hang glider up into the sky, cut loose and then float down. So that our story was to try and cover that. So yeah, it was a doozy.
It sounds amazing at face value, but then you start thinking about it. 6,000 feet of line that they let out to run this hang glider up into the air. Two people on the hang glider, somebody down below driving the boat. How in God's name do you try to take pictures and document that and have it make sense and not have the cameras fall from a mile up in the sky and end up in the principal's office?
Well, I think
you
can only do that in the modern era. Honestly, that would have been a story that would be so different in days gone by. It would be so much harder to do without the small cameras. So we were able to hook up GoPros to the hang glider, microphones on the people riding. So I didn't even have to be there to film it. Just hit record.
And what is for that one guy on the planet listening who doesn't know what a GoPro is?
Right. Tiny action cameras. So a little itty bitty camera that is waterproof and impact proof and has a nice wide field of view so you can tuck it into places. I feel like most people not only know what a GoPro is, but have one in a drawer at their house.
I feel like the flight attendant on the Frontier flight doing the little pre-flight thing for
that person
who doesn't know how to do a seatbelt. Here's how you do it. But GoPros, everyone knows what they are. They're just everywhere, and they go everywhere.
Yep, little action cameras that definitely revolutionized what we do for a time. And now that impact has been absorbed, and people are used to seeing that angle, so you're looking for something new. Now drones are very popular. So all those tools we employed to film this story about hang gliding, as well as the traditional camera on the ground with a really long lens, in which case we were filming from a boat trying to get shots of a hang glider in the sky, so a lot of challenges to it. But again, technology really made it possible to film that story in a way that would have been really tough even 10 years ago. 5 years ago. It's amazing the way things are changing.
So was there a moment on that shoot, and Kyle, same with your whitewater, were there any moments where you thought, it's about to hit the fan? This is not good. Oh, no.
It always goes well. On every shoot, there's always something. I mean, usually when you look back on the shoot, you go, oh, here's what I could have done or should have done. I'm trying to remember on that one if I thought, I feel like that one was going well, and I knew we had it when I actually, from the boat, got a shot with a hang glider and an eagle in it, which was part of the story, that where they soar is by the bluffs of that along Lake Pepin, and the eagles also fly there. So when we had that shot, I knew we had the story, and a lot of it was kind of wait till the GoPro comes down and take a look at what you got, and then hope the audio is good later. But that one didn't feel like it was going to go belly up at any point, and was shot in a matter of hours. So it was all a lot of setup, and then 2 hours later, we're kind of done.
Yeah, I think both of these stories, although involve water and maybe a little bit of risk of dropping the camera in the water, they were both pretty good days shooting at the office. But as far as like a bad day of shooting goes, there's like anything physically demanding. You know, like if you're on like a long hunt, like we did an elk hunt in Dunton, Colorado at like elevation, and both Pete and I getting up at like 3 a.m, get our gear and do a couple mile hike up the mountain, out of breath, carrying the big tripods, the production V-mounted tripod, plus the big FS7s. Pete rolled his ankle one day, but he kept going, He did it we had to get the story. And then you get to your spot still in the dark in the elk blind, praying that an elk comes soon because you're already dead tired. You know, it's cold. It's winter time there. You're sitting in snow watching the woods kind of wake up. and just hoping you can will it to happen. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there all morning, freezing.
And
we didn't see anything. That day sucked.
That's when you need to be a really good photographer.
I got to will it harder, I guess.
But that's part of the reason we stay in business, right? It's not about that elk. It's about a story. And you guys just have this uncanny knack for getting stories.
Well, you'd be observational. And even if you saw the elk on that story as an example, that's still only going to be a couple shots out of your story. So you're taking so much other footage to tell the story. So you're going to be close-ups on the eyes of the hunters, you're going to the breath in the air, all the little details and observational stuff that helps set the scene. And then if the elk doesn't show up, if you've done your job with all the other stuff, you can still tell a good story with a good writer behind it. Yeah.
Maybe someday. little inside Talk. Television humor there. So, Kyle, that day, do you remember about what time you guys finally walked back down off the mountain?
Oh, I don't know. We probably took a break on like 10, 11 a.m., hiked all the way back down. But then we'd go back for the evening as well. So, I mean, it's just a physical toll to like put yourself in those situations where you might witness something. And
that most folks will never see.
Exactly. And so there's, you know, the positive side of it. You know, you do that physical toll and you might see like the best sunrise or sunset of your life with, you know, wildlife that you wouldn't otherwise see. You'd see a lot of things you wouldn't otherwise see on a lot of these shoots.
Yeah, it's often worth it to get up that early and hike up or whatever. What's another saying I like is the mark of a good adventure is it's not always fun while it's happening.
No, well, it's downright awful.
Yes, a lot of times.
A lot of the times.
But Kyle brings up another point that a lot of our stress as a photographer is waiting for something to actually happen. So sometimes you know what's going to happen. We're going to go do a story on an artist. They're going to make their art in front of us. We can say, do it again. We know what to expect. But if you're trying to capture wildlife, a migrating bird or something like that, you may be in for a long wait. And just that tension of being ready to hit record and wanting so bad to hit record, hours go by before you actually have a reason to, is that that can bring stress and amazing relief when you finally get a shot and you're like, I got it.
Yes. That definitely is a mental game, especially like on our bird hunting show, The Flush. You know, if you do a wintertime shoot, I've been out there negative 20 degrees and I brought the wrong boots, so my feet are already wet. And you know, my fingers are frozen because you want a pair of gloves that'll keep you warm, but also enough to operate the camera.
I haven't found those gloves.
Well, you need
they don't exist.
You need hobo gloves. No one wants to get them, but you need those ones where it's just your fingertips exposed. But
And that show, bird hunting, you know, like you mentioned, the artist, you can do it over and over again. But with like these wild birds, they're not gonna. There's nothing convenient. They're not gonna sit still. And so when you're suffering, freezing, and all these other things, you got to be ready for that bird to jump up and get it in focus, get a good shot.
Yeah. So.
This is the essence of who we are. And this is why I have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder when somebody is critical of our work. Oh, you didn't really do that. Or those birds aren't wild or whatever the argument. I tend to snap back in fairly short temper because I work hard, but you guys work even harder, and that is part of the amazement of this job, right?
Yeah.
We're not making it up.
Yeah.
We're out in it, and it's wonderful because we're trying to share those moments with as many people as possible.
Yeah, it's rewarding. It is a good job. I don't want to paint too rosy a picture because once we go get those images, then we spend a lot of time sitting in an edit bay in front of a computer. So there's a ton of non-glamorous. And if I have a bad back, it's not from lugging cameras up mountains or underwater. It's from sitting for too long editing the footage. But also its own adventure.
You sit in this nice pseudo-darkened suite with incense burning and a one-pound bag of Frito chips.
That too.
Right? Like,
I'm not complaining. It's a good gig. I look forward to that. I mean, I really love being out filming, but when you are putting it all together, that's really the exciting part.
It's the incense and the Fritos.
That's probably it.
All right. I'm going to get a little thick on you guys in a second because you are both now growing families. And there is a lot of travel and at times a small amount of risk to your jobs. I want to ask you about that. But first, we need to pay some bills. By the way, I'm Bill Shirk, and you are listening to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories, along with Eric Anderson and photojournalist Kyle Heidenreich, and our red-faced, extremely chuckly engineer, Brandon Martin. You didn't like that transition?
That was brilliant.
It was money, Bill.
Speaking of money, let's pay some bills. This podcast in the world, no doubt, they have been crazy lately, right? We all have the busy work schedules. We've got the kids, coaching, work travel, you know, the routine. At times, it all feels like it's a little too much. But you know what? I think I am finding a way to take some time and truly get away. And I do it with what they call, Kyle, a Voyager sauna. Kyle and I just shot with them. That's why I asked. Voyager, they build custom saunas for your home, backyard, or business, and they are the only company around building these premier mobile units. Units on wheels. They go anywhere you go. Believe me, it's the pick of the Shirk family. Workers, they use clear grade cedar benches, spray foam insulation, Kuma wood-fired stoves, or Hilo electric heaters. These are Finnish-influenced hand-built saunas that will last a lifetime. And the best part, they're constructed with care by the hometown Voyagers team. We love our new mobile sauna. Voyager, a Minnesota movement influenced by Finnish culture. Visit voyagerssaunas.com and get ready to de-stress. Hey, we would also like to thank the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Minnesota's wildlife management areas are a vast array of lands all across Minnesota. These 1,440 wildlife management areas are valued not only for wildlife, but also for Minnesota's outdoor recreation opportunities. They maintain hunter walking trails, plant food plots for wildlife, and develop acres and acres of prairie and grasslands. To find out more, go to mndnr.gov/WMAS.
And also, we cannot forget about Kinetico. Oh, so good. You know, the Shirks love our Kinetico water. It's no secret. We live out in the country, and we have that ironclad well water. It's good news and bad, right? Well, we treat all of our water with the Kinetico Whole Home Water Treatment System. We also use Kinetico's K5 drinking water system. You know that white buildup you get around your faucets? Yeah, we've got none of that. Our dishes are clean. My wife, Katie, loves what Kinetico water does for her hair and skin. And the Shirk boys both drink water out of the K5 tap all day long. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Before soccer practices, before hockey practices, they always fill their water bottles. They never want water from the rinks and from the fields. The best part, you know that well water taste and that foul smell? It's gone. Call Kinetico like we did, and look forward to clean, safe water. All right, guys. Kyle Heidenreich, Eric Anderson, two photojournalist extraordinaires. We're talking about the difficulties of your jobs, and one of them, Kyle, for you is coming soon. Eric, you've been in this world for a couple of years now. It's having a family. It is being a photojournalist. You guys are dedicated to your jobs. You're traveling literally all over the globe to gather stories for our television shows. Is our job safe? Yes, but we are adventure, kind of free-spirited people. So we're on top of mountains. We're in crazy whitewater. We're up a mile high in the sky on hang gliders. Like, there is some risk. Eric, your child now?
19 months.
Almost 2 years old. And how often are you thinking about that little guy when you're on the road?
Yeah, all the time.
Are you ever thinking about your son and your wife as you are, whatever, winching in to go up or walking along the edge of a mountain where it's 500 feet straight down. Like,
yeah,
are you focused on your job or are those things in the back of your...
Well, both. I mean, we don't ever get asked to do anything too crazy, but there's always opportunities. You know, you can do our, you can do your job safely, or and then you can say, well, then again, if I scurry up that cliff face, there might be a really cool shot up there. So you pick your battles. You take a little. I think everyone here is taking some kind of risk to get a cool shot. You know, sometimes just traveling is a bit of a risk. But yes, that's a bigger factor now, and for sure, there's stuff that I used to do before that I maybe wouldn't do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, may hold off on cave diving for a little while.
Kyle, you're next. It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming up soon. And honest, until you asked me that, I haven't thought about that question at all, but it is coming. But I imagine it's got to suck, kind of, being away from your family. You have two kids, and so you've been through that a whole bunch. The only thing I can relate to, I don't know what it's like to miss my child, like when I'm on the road, but I know when you're, you know, across the country or something, and you go back to your hotel room at the end of the day, you're uprooted from your life for a week at a time. It's like, man, I just kind of want to be home right now.
Yep.
So that's got to be intensified when your kid's at home.
So how far away are you from being a daddy-o?
2 months or less.
Oh, it's coming. He's going to weep. Yeah. He's going to be sitting in the budget for motel just weeping.
Yeah. I got to get home. It's awesome.
But as I say, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And probably me leaving the house for a week at a time occasionally is the reason my wife is still with me. So I think
run, Forrest,
right,
run.
Right. That's good. It makes coming home that much sweeter. And yeah, there is. It's different for sure with a kid.
It is. We all have a connection to home, right? It's not about us. It's about the world. It's how people are. But I can remember being in Montana on the side of a mountain. And my phone, I got service in a pretty sketchy area. And I picked it up and it was Katie. She said, the house is flooding. We had just moved into a new house we had built. I thought, oh, you know, Brady Shirk spilled, gallon of milk and whatever. Well, she quickly hung up, not because I said that, but because she was rushed and all that. The house had truly flooded.
Give you something to think about while you're up there and can't do anything about it.
And that is the worst feeling on the planet, to be away from your family in such a faraway place where you physically can't. I can't just walk and go jump on a Greyhound bus or grab a flight home, right? You know, so there's that separation, and it tugs at you at times. That's why I like to just send you guys out alone.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sorry, I'm busy that weekend, but yeah. Can you go to Alaska? We don't do that. Well, hats off to both of you. As strange as this sounds, one of our pats on the back comes from the folks at the National Academy of Television...
Arts and Sciences,
Emmy folks, and they just announced their nominations for the year, and I think you both have your names up in the bright neon lights.
I think all three of us did all right. Yeah, the company netted some 14 nominations, and we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out.
For you, Eric, hang gliding, hang gliding.
It was a great story, which you wrote, and it was... You know, well produced and put together. So it's a good tale. So we'll see what happens there. It's always nice to be recognized by your peers.
Kyle,
Travis produced a story.
Travis
Frank produced a story. Yep. Kind of like a heartbreaking tale of celebration of life in the uplands. A diehard bird hunter out there randomly had a brain tumor and had cancer, and was kind of living out his last life doing what he loved in North Dakota bird fields. Mm-hmm. So it was a heavy story. So we're honored that one got selected.
That's wonderful. Again, you know, Ron Chera, who founded this company way back in the day, used to say, storytelling has been around since those hairy guys sat around campfires cooking dinosaur meat, right? The power of the story. And that's all we do. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science. We're not saving lives, but we are trying to make people feel a little something when they watch our work, and that's a big deal.
When you go out and film with Ron Chera, you have hung out with a hairy guy eating dinosaur meat.
Yes.
That's what I got out of that.
He's not wrong. Yeah, we didn't talk about that part of it. The toughest part of our job is the talent. I put that in quotes. The
talent, yeah.
The on-screen talent that we go out with. So, catching Ron's slings and arrows is definitely the hardest part of my job. So,
well, he is the word retired. He's not retired.
Yeah.
But there's a lot less.
Yeah.
Do you like traveling alone, or do you guys like going in duos or as a team?
I'd say, I don't know.
Both?
Yeah, both.
Am I opening a can of worms here by asking that?
I don't think so.
Am I going to feel bad? Am I going to go weep after this deal?
That's an itemized list.
Nobody likes me.
if you're local, it can be easier to go focus and get the job done quick without too many cooks in the kitchen sometimes.
Yeah.
If you're on the road, it's definitely nice to have company for
that's
multiple
it. Yeah,
days.
That's the best thing. You get to know your coworkers by doing a giant road
prefer
trip.
Prefer to be... referred to as a chef.
The not chef. A cook. Excuse me.
Right. Well, hats off to both of you. You guys are part of the reason this job is amazing. This would be an awful, awful existence if we didn't like the people we work alongside. Because we're traveling together. Oftentimes we're huddling up like those on Naked Afraid, trying to survive the storm and get up so we can document, right? We spend a lot of time
together.
I wasn't
on that shoot. I don't know. that's for our next podcast after dark.
Right, but we find ourselves in all kinds. I'm writing a story right now. Camping at 40 below zero in the middle of nowhere with poor Aaron Ochtenberg and these... two guys who it was their first time trying winter camping, right? Like, those can be stressful, life-changing moments, right?
You're in weather you could die in.
Yes.
That sounds like a bad day at work to me. Where's Aaron?
Hey, this whole podcast is about stories. I can remember being in Saratoga, Wyoming, with a fishing guide who was just awesome. He had one leg, and his fake leg was painted like a brown trout. And we went up at elevation. Greg Schultzenberg was the photojournalist on that shoot, and it was like 80 degrees, sunny. We get on these ATVs, and we go up to 11,000 feet to fish this little high-altitude stream. We're right above the trees, and there are just these big, puffy white clouds all of a sudden. And in 10 minutes, it went from 80 degrees to we are tucked in between boulders with cloud to ground lightning. The temperature starts to drop. Rain becomes sleet, becomes hail, becomes like snow. And we're just stuck. And literally, Greg and I have our heads between our knees. Like, oh my Lord, what is happening? And this thing passes, and the guide's like, we got to get off the mountain, because Greg's going to be so mad that I'm telling this story, but he didn't have, I'd asked him that morning, do you have your kit ready to go? And he was worrying about cameras and wide-angle lenses and tripods and batteries for the microphones, so he kind of had his kit, but he didn't have his rain gear. So he didn't have a coat, he didn't have bibs. So now we're in this literal 32-degree snowstorm, soaking wet, hypothermia is coming on, and it's like, we have to get off the mountain. And we raced. He had lost feeling in his hands trying to ride the ATV down the mountain. Like, we got down, we got off, and that was one of those nights where we plopped down on the couch. We're like, what just happened? Makes for a great story after the fact.
There you go. Different kind of hell that bad day.
It's not as tough as fishing with Ron.
Slinging arrows. Thanks, boys. Yeah. We appreciate you and all your work. So there you go. That's the long version of answering a question from somebody at the Minnesota State Fair. We have a very difficult job at times, but it sure is awesome. I'm Bill Shirk. This is the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. Thank you so much to all the sponsors that make these episodes happen every week. The podcast presented by Kinetico Water Treatment Systems. You know, my family uses Kinetico. You should too. Also, our newest sponsor, North Dakota Tourism. Voyager Saunas and Mobile Units. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And the Minnesota Propane Association. And of course, who could forget Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Grass-Fed Beef. Thanks so much. And as we say every week, don't forget to introduce a kid to the great outdoors.